It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to the show. We are starting things off with a couple of news items for you. First off, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has reopened all of their state lands east of the Cascade Mountains to overnight use again, which is great news for all of us who enjoy our deer, duck, or elk camps during hunting season. But you're still not allowed to have any campfires, and the Oak Creek Wildlife Area that is near Natchez is also closed because of an ongoing wildfire in that area. Second, deer hunters in northern Idaho may see reduced deer populations in the northern Idaho panhandle, where a hemorrhagic disease known as EHD is broken out and is killing white-tailed deer. Additional hemorrhagic deer diseases were reported by Idaho Fish and Game earlier this summer in the Clearwater region, and one of our longtime listeners and deer hunters reached out to me last week to let me know there may be a disease outbreak affecting the white-tailed deer in northeast Washington as well. These hemorrhagic disease outbreaks are naturally occurring, but unfortunately for the deer who catch them, they are usually fatal. So if you do kill a deer that appears to be acting ill or has a black spleen or liver, it's recommended you do not eat it and report the finding to your local fish and game officials. This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we'll be talking to outdoors writer Jason Brooks about lightweight hunting rifles you can use to shoot healthy deer, elk, bear, bighorn sheep, or mountain goats. These rifles are great if you're trying to shave off pounds on a backcountry hunt, but there are some potential drawbacks to be aware of. Jason will tell you about these along with his picks when it comes to buying a lightweight rifle. Jaime Rodriguez with J-Rod Angling joins us to talk mid-Columbia River walleye fishing during the month of September, and then we'll talk to Eric Christensen with Sun Mountain Lodge in North Central Washington. Located on a hill overlooking the Methow Valley, this five-star lodge features great accommodations, fabulous dining, and all sorts of outdoors activities to enjoy. Unfortunately, it's been closed this summer due to nearby wildfires, but it's getting ready to reopen in October, and you'll want to hear more about this great destination. Our final stop today? That would be Glendale Reservoir in Wyoming. It's quite the destination for walleye anglers, and one fisherman who knows it better than most is Wade Sears, the guide behind Rock and Horse Adventures. Wade will tell you about fishing Glendale Reservoir in the fall and the unique way he catches walleye out of there this time of year. Techniques that might also work on a reservoir near you. In addition to this, we'll also tell you about one place that is bucking the trend when it comes to low steelhead returns, a river where the summer steelhead run is nearly double the 10-year average. Now that's a place I want to go fishing. Toss in our Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week and your chance to win a $25 gift card to use at their hunt sale going on right now. And I'd say we've got another fun hour of the outdoors coming your way. So let's kick it off, as we always do, with another edition of Sportsman Spotlight.
British Columbia Ocean Fishing, David Sparks with Sportsman Spotlight. My good friend Brian Herbert and I play hockey together. He's Canadian, so he's tremendous. He was telling me about his friend Ruggy, who's a fishing guide in British Columbia.
I've been fishing, I guess, since I was five or, well, probably younger than that. My dad started fishing in the 70s, and fishing was unbelievable back then. Once I got a little older, I went and got myself a boat. And there's all sorts of rivers around here, but for me, most of my fishing's all been saltwater. My dad started guiding 25 years ago. What he would do is go up to the lodges all up in the Queen Charlotte's. There's probably about 20 lodges up there, and they fly up there, basically. And the company that I work for, we fill in. We're called fill-in guides. Each lodge usually holds around 50 people, and every 4 days or 5 days, they switch out those 50 people. 50 new people come in. So the extra guides just fly in with the guests. Most of the boats, they're aluminum, 18-foot to 22-foot. They take quite the beating. They're built for West Coast water. Sometimes you're up there, and people are paying, you know, $5,000 to be on these trips for 4 days. You can't always control the weather, so we're out in sometimes, you know, 30, 40 knot winds and 3-4 meter seas, so it can get pretty hairy out there. There's 5 species of salmon we fish for. Chinook is the main one. That's the king salmon, up to, you know, 75 pounds, 80 pounds up there. Usually every day there's at least maybe 2 or 3 30, 40 pounders coming in. Most of the fish are around 15 to 20 pound range. You're allowed 4 each of those per guest.
David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
Hi, I'm Tutu. At least that's what my grandkids call me. And my heart is breaking for these precious children who will be forced to endure masks once again this school year. And that's why I support Unmask Our Kids WA. Visit unmaskourkidswa.com and join their email list for resources, plus connect with all the others that share our concerns about the physical and mental health risks masks have when they're forced on our children. You know, I was surprised to learn that it doesn't have to be that way. According to the revised Code of Washington, local school boards have the discretionary powers to create policy. Unmask Our Kids is advocating for mask policy to be decided by parents in conjunction with their school board, never by the state. We encourage you to contact your local representative. Let's work to revoke the governor's emergency powers, because parents and grandparents know what's best for their children. At Unmask Our Kids WA, you'll find the resources plus science showing all the risks when children are masked. Where there is risk, there needs to be choice. UnmaskOurKidsWA.com.
The preceding ad does not necessarily reflect the opinion of Northwestern Outdoors Radio and is aired in conjunction with Sportsman Spotlight. Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. We've got my old friend Jason Brooks on the line. He's that prolific outdoors writer from Western Washington, and he's got a brand new article in the American Shooting Journal, Lightweight Rifles for Every Hunter. And this is a great and timely article because there's a lot of hunting going on where you would want a lightweight rifle, whether you're participating in the high buck hunt in the Cascades, or maybe climbing some steep terrain after mountain goats or bighorn sheep, or just venturing way back in the backcountry on foot for elk or deer or bear. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John, for having me.
So let's start off with lightweight rifles. How do we get to this place from, you know, our father's rifles? They all weighed 10, 12 pounds. And now we're talking about going to the backcountry with a 6-pound rifle. And this is nice because not only every pound counts, but every ounce counts. What's the innovations that have gotten us here?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head right there. It started with the old heavy rifles that we all, you know, hunted with back in the day. And as the phenomena, if you want to call it that, of backcountry hunting really kicked in about, probably almost 2 decades ago now, hunters realized they could save a lot of weight if they had a lighter rifle. Probably the biggest innovation is switching out from the iron and the steels to titanium. Titanium is extremely strong, extremely lightweight, very expensive, but then also came some CNC machining and those kinds of things where we can start realizing we can shave some of this weight off, some of the unnecessary weight. They really looked at the rifle itself as a tool and go, okay, if we can make this a tool, because, you know, you look at the old rifles with the American walnut stocks, they're just beautiful. Some of these rifles that are lightweight, in my opinion, aren't necessarily very aesthetic, but they're very practical. So they kind of combine the, let's take a look at what's practical and what we need to make a lightweight rifle. And they just start shaving the weight right off, from hollowing out the stocks. Even the knurl on the bolt handle is hollowed out. They saved every ounce they can. And now you can get a rifle that is 6 pounds, even less, and be a tack driver and carry it comfortably in the mountains all day long. Whether you're in the backcountry or even in the front country, as we get older, it's nice to not have to carry around a 12-pound weight on our shoulder.
This is very, very true. I can't disagree with that. I've got to ask you, though, the biggest complaint I've heard about lightweight rifles are the recoil, because they're so lightweight, and the accuracy. Are these true or false stereotypes?
They are true to an extent. So let's start with the recoil aspect of it. You have a rifle, especially something like a 300 Winchester short mag, which is one of the lightweight rifles I have, it's going to kick. Well, now you take away any kind of weight that might actually absorb that recoil. You look at a bench rest shooter, a competition shooter, they're shooting 10, 12, 14-pound rifles because it won't move. It also helps keep that kick down. So almost all of your lightweight rifles will come with a muzzle brake or a compensator of some sort. And with that comes a really loud noise. So some people actually, when they think they're being kicked by the rifle, it's actually the muzzle blast coming back and hitting their ears, and it hurts. Anything that causes you pain, whether it be physical pain, like the rifle punching you in the shoulder, or audio pain, when somebody yells and screams, we, like, you know, cover our ears. So when that rifle goes off, it could just be the actual rifle's noise that you're actually hearing in your ears that causes the pain. So highly recommend hearing protection. Hearing protection will actually save the day when it comes to recoil. People don't think of it that way, but it really does. Put those earplugs in, use a good compensator and a good recoil pad, and then you'll be good to go.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Great advice there. All right. Now, the article is Lightweight Rifles for Every Hunter. Let's talk about the best budget-friendly lightweight rifle that you found.
One of the best budget lightweight rifles that I have is actually the Savage Lightweight Hunter. I love that rifle. It's got the AccuTrigger. And really quick, you're talking about accuracy. I forgot to mention that. These rifles are extremely accurate. The one problem and drawback is you can actually move the rifle as you're pulling the trigger just by pulling the trigger, by putting pressure on the rifle, because they're so lightweight.
Right.
So you have to use a solid rest. And the Savage Lightweight Hunter, a 5.5-pound rifle, 6-pound rifle, actually has a fully adjustable trigger with their AccuTrigger. The Kimber Pro Dissolve Black they just came out with would be considered on the a little higher end of the budget rifle, but a phenomenal rifle at 4.5 pounds.
Wow.
And it also has a fully adjustable trigger. Again, you can do a bunch of research. There's the Browning Micro Midas. There's the Mossberg Patriot. I'm a big fan, if you're going to go budget, of the Savage Lightweight Hunter, just because of how it was built.
What is the price point for that Savage?
You're probably right around the upper $800-$900 range. I bought mine over a decade ago, and back then it was probably like $700. So it's gone up, you know, with inflation like everything else. The Mossberg Patriot's a little bit cheaper than that, or a little more cost effective than that. And the Kimber Pro Dissolve Black's right around $1,000 to $1,100, $1,200. So, you know, you are paying for the machining, the tight tolerances, and the titanium that has to go into these things. Even if they don't use titanium, it's the technologies and the fact they have to be so finely machined with the CNC machines that's what you're paying for. So when we say budget, what you're looking at more is, hey, you want a good quality rifle, because if you get a cheap made lightweight rifle, you'll break it. Like literally, you fall down, the stock's going to break in half. Now you don't have a rifle. So you don't want to go cheap. You want to go budget. There's a big difference.
All right. Well, let's use Admiral Farragut's line here. You know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. In this case, price be damned. What's the best lightweight rifle out there in your mind, period, end of story?
Lone Rock TI from Oregon Mountain Rifle Company. And even for the high-end type rifle, it's not way out. I mean, it's $4,000. Don't get me wrong. Some of these rifles are $7,000, $8,000, $9,000. But Lee Freeman from Oregon Mountain Rifle Company, he hand-builds each rifle one at a time. The Lone Rock TI, the TI for titanium, has an 18-ounce action. You're talking about a 5-pound rifle. He took one with us to Idaho last year in 6.5 PRC, and he was hitting a target, a 12-by-18-inch target, at 1,100 yards with a 5.5-pound rifle.
Amazing.
Extreme accuracy, extreme tight tolerances. This guy is the best in the business when it comes to building a custom rifle. Oregon Mountain Rifle Company, Lee Freeman, hands down the Lone Rock TI. And it has a folding stock. So like when we fly in these in the backcountry in these small bush planes, or if you're hiking in the backcountry, you can take the stock and fold it and actually put this thing inside your pack.
Now, here's my next question for you. I know you are an avid big game hunter, and you love to do these Idaho hunts. Were you able to draw a tag for an Idaho hunt this year, or are you going to be doing something different?
Well, no, I did. And what's interesting about that is I'll be taking my Kimber Subalpine 300 Western Short Mag with me on an Idaho elk hunt. That's going to be a cow elk hunt. My son and I both drew late-season cow elk tags in the high desert area. So we're going to be going over there and doing that. But even worse than that, talking about glutton for punishment, tomorrow is the opening day archery for Washington State. My son has a archery cow elk tag, so we're going to go in, and I'm going to be his packer for that one. And then 6 weeks from today, I leave for the backcountry of Idaho to pack and photograph and document and write about a hunt that my buddy Jeff Martin's doing in the Salmon River Breaks. I don't even have a tag other than a wolf tag, so I'll probably be taking my Dissolve Black, my Kimber, in there for that. It's 6.5 Creedmoor, which is good for the wolves. But either way, I'm packing for that one. So I'm a meat packer this year. I am going to Idaho for a whitetail hunt, and then I'm turning around and going right to Montana and hunting over in Montana for a deer, probably more likely mule deer. I'm going to try and look for a nice whitetail, but we're going to be mostly hunting the Missouri River break, so probably some nice mule deer over there. And so, yeah, so I've got hunts in Washington, Idaho, Montana, but unfortunately, a lot of those, I'm actually just taking my camera along with an empty pack to pack out elk quarters.
I have no doubt we're going to read about all these adventures, whether it be the American Shooting Journal or Northwest Sportsman Magazine or maybe some of the other publications you write for, and you've written for some pretty big ones. Very last question. In addition to this, you are also the editor for The Tail Out, the digital magazine that's published through Salmon and Steelhead Journal. Anything new we need to know about that we ought to be reading about from Jason Brooks?
Next week, the next issue of The Tail Out should be coming out. We're just putting the final touches on it. And of course, Western Hunting Journal, I'm a field editor there. If you want to see some of my photography, I've got a nice spread on the Idaho whitetail hunts that we do. And the latest issue, it just came out earlier this week. NorthwestFisheryReports.com, the Real Life magazine, I've got one coming out there on Chinook fishing in Puget Sound, I believe. I'm trying to remember all my venues here. And of course, my monthly column at Northwest Sportsman Magazine, Northwest Pursuits, and all the other fun stuff I do with my freelancing and my photography. I'm at Instagram at Jason Brooks Photography. So you can hit me there if you want to look at some of my photos. And yeah, looking forward to this fall.
That's Jason Brooks, folks. There's a reason I like to get him on from time to time. He's a prolific writer, he's a prolific hunter, and he's also a very good friend. Jason, thanks as always for sharing this with us on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you, John.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands. We've helped ban the use of drones for hunting. We help repair wildlife corridors and key riparian areas. We speak up against illegal ATV use. Please join this dynamic conservation group. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
With more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's that time again. It's time for another extended Max Minute. And with us again is Jaime Rodriguez, the man behind J-Rod Angling. Jaime, great to have you back on the air.
Always great to be back with you, John.
Let's talk about September walleye fishing in the Columbia River. Your stomping ground is the Columbia between Tri-Cities and John Day Dam. And this is a month that's notoriously tough when it comes to triggering walleye bites because the river is just chock full of these shad smolt and the walleye are pretty well gorged. What do you do to try to get them to strike?
John, if you recall fishing with me last September at a fish camp, we didn't do very good at all during the day. But I'll tell you what, when I left fish camp, I just didn't go straight home. I went to the river. And by this time, the sun has fallen, the stars are out, and I'm out there catching my limit of walleye. So I'm going to be targeting more of afternoon trips when the walleye are feeding actively.
So we were just fishing too early, and I think that's what most people do. Everyone's used to fishing the morning, especially on the Columbia River where that wind kicks up. But if you can get out there in the late afternoon or evening, you can go ahead and get to the bite. What do you like to use at this time of year?
Right now, if I'm going to be out there targeting my afternoon trips, I'm probably going to be throwing on a big old crankbait, something that's going to get down to the strike zone and targeting certain depths in the water column.
How deep are you fishing? What color do you like to use?
Right now, it's not so much about color. It's more about vibration and action. It's always good to have an array of crankbaits. But once you do dial in a program with your color, then you can start switching out colors and whatnot. But the walleye are going to respond more to action as opposed to color. And I'm anywhere between 16 to 23 feet in the afternoon bite.
So when it comes to September, consider going fishing a little later in the day or maybe in the early evening. Tie on a crankbait, get it down deep, and get ready to reel in some walleye. If you want to find out more about fishing with Jaime Rodriguez, check out his Facebook page at J-Rod Angling. He's always posting pictures of what he's catching there and sometimes the lures that he's using too. Thanks again, Jaime.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Go fishing. Help salmon and make money. You can do it through September 30th by catching northern pike minnow and turning them in for cash. Here's how it works. First, register at a designated station on the Columbia or Snake River. Then, go fishing. At the end of the day, turn in any pike minnow you catch 9 inches or longer and look for the ones with tags worth $500. You'll get vouchers for those pike minnow you turn in, and you mail those in for cash. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
I'm Bob Loomis, and I fish for walleye. Sometimes when I'm out on the water, I feel like a destroyer captain hunting for targets with my electronics. I'm not hunting submarines, though. I'm hunting fish. And when I find that big one on the fish finder, I want to make sure she's going to bite. That's where the SmileBlade Slow Death Rig from Max Lure comes in. The SmileBlade spins and flashes at ultra-slow speeds, and the one-of-a-kind red hook keeps that bait moving in a way the fish can't resist. It's the SmileBlade Slow Death Rig, only from Max Lure.
Pheasants Forever is working hard every day to ensure there's more wildlife habitat for the future. Join the habitat leader and help create wildlife habitat in your community. Go to pheasantsforever.org.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. You know, if you're looking for a very special place to take someone, one of the nicest lodges that you will find in the entire Northwest is Sun Mountain Lodge. It's located near Winthrop in North Central Washington. And they've had kind of a rough time over the summer because there's been some big fires in that area. That's why we are reaching out to Eric Christensen. He's a sales and marketing manager to find out exactly how fires have affected the lodge and how things are going now. Eric, it's great to have you back on the show. It's been far too long.
Well, thank you, John. It's good to be back and very nice to speak with you. This we're almost in the fall morning. It sure feels like it.
Yes, it does. I love September. I know you do, too. And a lot of folks like to spend time at Sun Mountain Lodge in September. Not this year, though. Before we get there, though, let's talk about Sun Mountain Lodge. I mean, it's truly a spectacular place. Why don't you give our listeners an overview of the property and some of the amenities that you have there near Winthrop?
Absolutely. You know, we call it luxury at the edge of the wilderness. Sun Mountain Lodge is perched on a hill about 3,000 feet above sea level and about 1,000 feet above the Methow Valley. The Methow River cuts through the valley, which is three major cities in the area. Well, you should call them major. They're small towns, but we have Mazama, Winthrop, and Twisp that make up the majority of this area. You know, so we're kind of smack dab in the middle of the wilderness. We have 112 guest rooms, 96 of which are lodge rooms with just amazing mountain views or valley views. And we have 16 fully stocked cabins on the shore of Patterson Lake, which if you drive up to Sun Mountain Lodge is about a mile before you get to the lodge. The lodge is located just a few minutes from the western themed town of Winthrop, Washington. I think we're literally like 15 minutes up from there. Overall, we're a 4.5-hour road trip from Seattle, in a 3.5-hour drive from Spokane. So we're literally in the middle of the state, north central Washington. And Sun Mountain Lodge is part of the Cascade Loop, which is one of the most beautiful byways in America. And the Cascade Loop is a loop highway featuring Highway 20, which is the North Cascades Highway, Highway 2, Stevens Pass Highway, and Highway 97, which runs north and south between the two along the Columbia River. So the reason why I'm focusing on the drive is that it's a big part of the experience coming to Sun Mountain Lodge. It's just fantastic sights along the way.
Oh, I agree. And folks, we haven't even hit on some of the other things here. There's some fun fishing to do at Patterson Lake, along with other water sports and paddling you can do. The dining at the lodge is out of this world. In the past, there's been some, you know, horse-drawn wagon rides where you can enjoy some campfire barbecues and just so much to do in the area, whether you like to fish or hike or just take in beautiful sunsets or maybe do some wildlife watching too. It's all there. But I've got to ask, you've been plagued by major wildfires this summer. For the last 2 years, you've had to deal with COVID, and you actually had to close this summer after being placed under level 3 emergency evacuation orders. What's been the impacts to the lodge, to the surrounding landscape, and operations going forward?
Sure. The Cedar Creek fire is the one that threatened the lodge. It started early July. I think it was just right around the 4th of July, give or take a day or two. But the origin was in the North Cascades, just east of Mazama. And the winds, you know, blew this fire in an easterly direction. So kind of traveled east and south. And at one point, it even closed the North Cass Highway, which is a major route for us for, you know, travelers to Sun Mountain Lodge, you know, in the summer months. And I thought for a while we were, you know, that was going to remain closed for the season. But the firefighters just did an unbelievable job getting containment and were able to safely reopen it. You know, in fact, if not for the work that our brave and talented firefighters did, the lodge would have been in serious jeopardy. So, you know, again, the fire started early July, and by the, you know, middle of July, we realized that it was pretty imminent that we were going to be evacuated. And on July 22nd, we got the official word to evacuate. You know, we had been evacuating guests leading up to that point, knowing it was coming. And also many of our employees had been evacuated from their homes and nearby communities. So it was really a very difficult time for the lodge. You know, at one point, firefighters had even, you know, created their dozer lines on some of our pretty beautiful meadows, and they had to back burn towards the fire to, you know, get rid of some of the fuels that the fire was consuming pretty close to our structures. But those efforts really did save the lodge. And, you know, once the evacuation levels had dropped and it was safe to come back, I had a chance to return. And I got to tell you, I was really surprised, pleasantly surprised to see that our views still look fantastic. It was not what I was expecting. I expected the worst. But the fire kind of left a sort of almost a patchwork pattern throughout the forest. It seemed to have, you know, very hot spots that would certainly burn a lot of trees, but then all around it would be green. Many trees were spared. So when you look out over our view, it really is much better than I was expecting. There are some trails up in the kind of the higher country where the fire burned hotter that will remain closed and will need more rehabilitation before they can open again. But, you know, the trail system is a really big part of the experience here at Sun Mountain Lodge, like you mentioned, with horseback riding and mountain biking, hiking. So there's plenty of trails that were unscathed and are ready for our guests this fall.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I know that you've been doing some renovations this summer since you've been closed. When are you reopening this fall, and what are those renovations you've been doing?
Yeah, you know, the damage really was not due to fire, it was smoke. We're very fortunate that our insurance policy was able to cover this extensive renovation plan that we have going on right now. We have a professional team in here going through the process. So what we've had to do is literally they've had to repaint walls, furniture has been replaced, floors, soft surfaces, bedspreads, mattresses, all those things are either cleaned and treated or replaced. The outside of the building has to be pressure washed and painted where needed. You know, if all goes according to schedule, which it is right now, we plan to reopen on October 16th. So we're excited about having this opportunity and this time to really make it clean and shiny and new, and looking forward to reopening.
Last question, when it comes to visiting Sun Mountain Lodge in October, early November, what are some reasons people might want to come?
There's a lot of things. You know, I know I don't have much time left, but, you know, we're starting to see the leaves turn now that nights are cooler. So come mid-October, they'll be in full fall color splendor. And we have aspen, larch, cottonwoods, maples. So you're going to see your oranges, yellows, reds, all sort of blended in with the rich green firs and pines. It's absolutely beautiful. In fact, we tell guests that there's no need to go to Vermont for fall color. We tell people from Vermont, they need to come to Menaw Valley. It's absolutely beautiful. You know, wide open spaces, views, lots of mountain fresh air, you know, drove a lot of people here during the pandemic, you know, looking at getting away and experiencing something like what we have. And, you know, that's some of the best reasons to come make a road trip to Sun Mountain Lodge.
Sun Mountain Lodge, folks, it is still standing, and coming October 16th, it'll be waiting for you to visit. You can find out more about this absolutely beautiful place in the Methow Valley by going to sunmountainlodge.com. That's the website to go to, sunmountainlodge.com for Sun Mountain Lodge. Again, if you haven't been there before, this is a great time to discover this place. If you have been there, it's a wonderful time to rediscover this place and enjoy not just the sights that you're going to see there and the beauty of the changing colors, but all the outdoors activities you can enjoy too in the Methow Valley this time of year. Eric, thanks for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you, John.
Come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand access to the outdoors. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org.
I'm gonna jig me up a walleye from the bottom of the lake. And I'm not gonna tell you what I use for bait. I'm a jigger. I'm the best jigger around.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio, and our next stop is Glendale Reservoir. It's a 12,500-acre lake about 100 miles north of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it's got the reputation of being one of the best walleye lakes you're going to find in the western United States. With us here to tell you more about it and fishing it during these fall months is Wade Sears. He's the owner of Rockin' Horse Adventures, and he specializes in walleye fishing at Glendale Reservoir. Wade, great to have you on the air.
Thanks for having me, John.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Glendale Reservoir in terms of its makeup? Tell us about the terrain. Tell us about what kind of reservoir this is and why the walleye fishing is so good here.
Well, like you said, it's a fairly large reservoir. It's about 13,000 acres or so. It draws down considerably throughout the year because of irrigation. So it fluctuates about 50 feet in lake level, and that provides some real challenges as far as the fishing goes throughout the season. There is a lot of different habitat. There's steep, rocky points. There's canyons. There's shallow, weedy bays. And the fish location changes throughout the year.
So this is a reservoir where the walleye oriented on rocky structure. It's not a sandy reservoir or a weed-lined reservoir?
Well, it's not really a weed-lined reservoir, but there is sandy beaches and sandy flats. And again, the structure you fish changes considerably throughout the year. In the spring, you're in the canyons, you're fishing rocky points. By summertime, you're back in the bays fishing tall weeds and even into the trees. And then by fall, it all dries up and you move out and you're fishing in the main lake basin.
Gotcha. So here's a question. All fisheries have a cycle, and you've been guiding on Glendale for 6 years, fishing it longer than that. Right now, when it comes to the walleye fishing at Glendale, are we looking at the best of times, the worst of times, or somewhere in between?
Fishing right now for walleye is fantastic there. There is a strong class of 17 to 19 inch eaters. There's also a strong class of 12 to 14 inch sublegal fish that'll replace those next year. The fish grow really fast there. They grow, I believe I was told, they grow to 18 inches in 3 years is what a biologist told me, which is quite remarkable for a northern climate. Right now, the fish population is as robust as I've ever witnessed it.
What is the limit at Glendale Reservoir in terms of walleye fishing?
You can keep six fish. It's a 15-inch minimum. And like I said, there's a strong class of the 17 to 19-inch fish, which are perfect eaters.
How big did the walleye get there?
The biggest I've caught is 30 inches, and that's about as big as they get. I've heard of 32 caught, and 27s and 25s are fairly common, so there's a lot of large fish in there as well.
Those are some pretty hefty fish. Okay, let's talk about fishing Glendale Reservoir in the fall. What techniques do you use to get those fish in the boat?
Well, right now, like I said, just because the water level is so low right now, it's about 50 feet low. That's about as low as it's going to get. There's two main methods. One is jigging with spoons, and the other is trolling with crankbaits.
Okay, let's go ahead and break that down. Let's talk about jigging with spoons. That's something I don't hear a lot about at other reservoirs, so tell me what kind of spoons you're jigging and the exact technique you're using.
So what you're doing is you're looking for rocky points, rock piles, usually somewhere in the 15 to 40-foot range. So having good electronics is key this time of year because you're not only hunting for the walleyes actively in 15 to 40 foot of water. You're also looking for the clouds of gizzard shad that you'll see on your sonar as well. They're about 2 inches right now, and that's what the walleyes are keying on. So the best kind of spoons and jigs right now that you use, the Jig and Rapala is a classic bait, and that's always very effective. There are also the glide baits that have become very popular, such as the Moonshine Shiver Minnow, the Acme Hyper Rattle, and then you can also use your classic spoons that you might use for salmon fishing, for instance. Anywhere from the 2 to 3 inch range, you like a nice heavy spoon that you can fish very aggressively, very fast, and you can drop them right down on top of those fish that you see on the sonar.
Interesting. So when you're talking about these salmon spoons, I presume we're talking like a vertical jigging spoon, like a Maxonic bait fish or a Point Defiance spoon?
Yes, anything like that. Other great spoons would be Hutch's Tackle has a 2-inch walleye hog spoon, I believe it's called.
And here's a question for you. A lot of Western reservoirs, and this is more of a winter technique, but it comes back to vertical jigging, people use blade baits. Are people using those this time of year at Glendo as well, or are they kind of sticking with the other ones you're talking about?
Yeah, blade baits can be very effective as well. It's really almost any bait that someone might use for ice fishing.
Okay.
Of course, the Jigging Rapala came from an ice fishing background. I think it's really caught on with the open water fishermen over the years. But yeah, those are the kind of baits you're using. Like I said, anything 2 to 3 inches and anything up to an ounce or even heavier.
And you talk gizzard shad as the bait to imitate. So what colors are you jigging?
The colors can change day by day, sometimes hour by hour. I usually always start with, you know, a black and silver or, you know, a gray, something to imitate a shad, something with a dot on it. But you can move to all white. You can move to a blue and chrome. Some days red. And then also, you always want to have some perch color as well, because perch is also a very important forage for the walleyes. Even though they're focusing on the shad, if they see a perch bait, a lot of times you can get them to go on that.
And as for the crankbaits, what do you like to use?
I like to use the shad wraps. I like
sure.
to use flicker shads. I like to use flicker minnows. I like to use Salmo hornets, all of them in the smaller range, anywhere from the number fives to the number sevens, sometimes the number nine, but that's the most common.
Here's a question. If you're using like a flicker shad, a number five or a number seven, those only go 5 to 7 or 9 feet deep. So are you using a downrigger or using a bottom bouncer to get those lures down to where the walleye are on the bottom?
Well, occasionally I'll use lead core, but this time of year, that river channel where you're going to be trolling for them is so shallow, it's only about 10 foot deep.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So if you're running a number five bait back, say 60, 70 feet, you're down there, you know, 8 feet down, you're right in the zone.
Okay. Let's talk about a typical day with you. Let's go ahead and walk through it. First off, what are your rates? And when people show up, what does the day look like?
Well, the rate is $400 for two anglers, $50 for an additional angler. I can't take up to four people. Three adults is preferred just to give everyone their room to maneuver
sure.
in the boat. We like to start pretty early in the summer. You know, 6 or 7 would be ideal. This time of year, in the fall, you don't really need to start early. So,
right.
you know, something like 9 o'clock is fine. The fishing usually actually increases in productivity throughout the day in the fall.
Okay. And are we talking a 6-hour day here?
Yep. 6-hour day is pretty typical. Sometimes we'll fish a little bit longer if we need to get a couple more fish, but 6 hours is the norm.
And obviously license and lunch and clothing's on you. Are you doing the flaying and packaging at the end?
Yeah, we'll flay the fish and package them for you. All you need to bring is the fishing license, some warm clothes, and bring your lunch, and I'll provide the cooler and water and everything else.
Well, it sounds like a great time to me, and boy, this sounds like a really fun reservoir to fish. Again, folks, we're talking about Glendo Reservoir. It's about, 100 miles north of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and again, as you've heard, it's got the reputation of being one of the best walleye lakes in the West. If you want to fish it, you probably ought to go with the guide the first time out. And the guide to go with is Wade Sears. He's the owner of Rockin' Horse Adventures. If you want to go to his website, go to Rockin', no G there, rockinhorseadventures.com. Another web address, it'll get you to the same place as glendowalleye.com. That's glendowalleye.com to book a walleye trip on Glendo Reservoir this fall. Wade, thanks for sharing all of this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
My pleasure, John.
I'm the best jigger around. I'm on a jiggy, 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 jiggy. Jig me up a walleye right now.
That's the sound you hear when a fish hits the new Sonic bait fish from Max Lure Company. This metal lure can be cast, trolled, or jigged, and will catch just about anything that swims in the sea, the river, or the lake. The Sonic bait fish has a unique vibration and flutter that can be rigged in 7 different ways. With all sorts of eye-catching colors and weights available, you'll be reaching for the Sonic bait fish as your go-to lure. It's the Sonic bait fish. Only from Max Lure Company.
Go fishing, make money, help out, and have fun. That's what the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery is all about. From May 1st through September 30th, catch pike minnow out of the Columbia and Snake Rivers and turn them in for cash. Pike minnow eat juvenile salmon and steelhead. Each one you catch helps more juvenile fish reach the ocean. Pike minnow are worth anywhere from $5 to $8, and keep an eye out for tagged fish worth $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org and go fishing.
Come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter, full of the gear you need to succeed this hunting season. Firearms, ammo, archery equipment, decoys, clothing, boots, and more. You'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse. Better still, the knowledgeable staff can help you with tips and frequent in-store seminars, all designed to help you bag a trophy or a limit. Find a location near you or shop online today at sportsmans.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
Welcome back. As you may recall from last week's show, we spent a lot of time talking about the plight of the Columbia and Snake River summer steelhead, which has seen its lowest run up the Columbia River over Bonneville Dam since 1938 and causing a slew of closures and restrictions. There is one Northwest River, though, that's bucking the trend this year, and that would be the Rogue River in southern Oregon. I got an email from Kelsey Helfrich with Helfrich River Outfitters, which shared the results of summer netting surveys that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is doing near Huntley Park on the Rogue. Their latest survey on August 30th caught 321 fish, nearly double the 10-year average of 174 fish typically caught, and those are just the adult steelhead. 3,711 of those hard-fighting half-pounders were also caught, also almost double the 1,889 fish netted in a typical year. This is great news, and while you can fish the Rogue by yourself, I would really recommend hiring a guide if you want to do it right. And Helfrich River Outfitters, they've got a great reputation earned by years and years of guiding on the Rogue. You can contact Kelsey through their website to book a trip at HelfrichRiverOutfitter.com. That's HelfrichRiverOutfitter.com, but you'll want to do so quick. Space is very limited. And now it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week, and this time around, it's all about a waterfall, and a very impressive one, too. It's so impressive, it's called the Niagara of the West, and it has a drop of 212 feet. As you might imagine, it's a popular tourist attraction, and it's located in one of our northwestern states. Here's your question. Do you know the name of the waterfall known as the Niagara of the West? If you do, you know what to do. Go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. Like and follow it if you haven't already. Then look for the post thread where we have the question and give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, just go to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com and let us know the name of the waterfall located right here in the Northwest that's known as the Niagara of the West. One lucky person who guesses right wins that $25 gift card that'll come in handy for the hunt sale going on at a Sportsman's Warehouse store near you right now. Whether you're looking for firearms, optics, outerwear to include sale price Sitka gear, targets, footwear, or more, you'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse, and there are plenty of them all over the northwestern and western United States. But if for some reason you can't make it to one this week, you can always shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. We've got to wrap things up. If you didn't catch the whole show, we'll have it uploaded in a few days so you can hear it as a podcast. And we've got a huge archive of past shows too. Just look for Northwestern Outdoors Radio or America Outdoors Radio or America Outdoors Radio Podcast to tune into this show and our sister show. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.